Blog Talk Radio.
In a little cafe, just the other side of the border, he was sitting there giving me looks that made my mouth water. So I started walking her way. She belonged to Bad Man Jose, and I knew, yes I knew, I should leave when I heard her say, "Hey, come a little bit closer, you're my kind of man, so big and so strong. Come a little bit closer, I'm all alone, and the night is so long." So we started to dance in my arms.
Honesty. Hey, James Bostic here, Conservative Perspectives, and I hope you can hear me. Got some technical crap going on, man. Basically, here's the deal. What happens usually is I just press a button, and the computer calls in and gets everything set up, and I can use my really cool blue USB mic, and the button didn't show up on the screen. So needless to say, I'm more than a little pissed off about that. But anyway, hopefully you can hear me. I hope. And not only me, but our guest. He's a longtime friend of mine and a friend of the program as well. He's never refused an invitation, and he's always very, very generous with his time. A former Immigration Naturalization Service federal agent, 30-plus years of experience in the areas of counterterrorism, drug enforcement, organized crime, immigration fraud, all those things as they would apply to the Immigration Naturalization Service. He's a terrific dude, and I know that right now he is thinking to himself, of all the introductions that he's received in his lifetime, this one is definitely the most recent. And with that, sure, I want to bring on our good friend, Mr. Michael Cutler. Hey, Mike, how's things?
Things are fine. You know, there's always glitches when you're dealing with technology, and I guess, but I hear you, and I hope that the audience can hear you this evening. How do you hear me?
Yes. Absolutely, we can. So, how's Trix? What's been going on?
Well, the whole world has been falling apart, you know, if you haven't been noticing.
Well, yeah,
one
but I mean,
question
that,
I,
other
I just
than that,
wish somebody would ask. Well, you know, I look at everything happening in Washington. I look at the crime around the country. It's upsetting, and it's unnecessary. That's what's really the most upsetting, James. What is happening should not be happening and would not be happening if not for some very terrible decisions. And you know, I want to start out by making the point that I always make. I'm registered as a Democrat. I don't know what in the world has happened to the Democrat Party. You know, I signed on with the Democrat Party decades ago when I was going to college, and it was the party of JFK and Scoop Henry Jackson and Harry Truman, and they were rational, they were reasonable, they understood national security every bit as much as did the Republicans. The issue wasn't whether or not we should be, you know, allowing drugs and criminals and terrorists into the United States. The issue really used to be, for those of you not old enough to realize it, whether you stood with labor or management essentially in places like New York. And both sides of the equation have reasonable concerns and unreasonable concerns, like any other argument. You know, they say when there's a divorce, there's at least three sides, his, hers, and the truth, okay? But if
right.
you look at the old Democrat Party, they were the party that represented the workers. The Republicans represented the employers, the management, the companies, and that's fine. And you know, the analogy I like to use is, let's think back to World War II and D-Day. Who do you credit with success at Normandy? Was it the brilliance of the generals, for example, Dwight Eisenhower, who's one of my favorite generals and presidents? Or was it the gallantry of the soldiers who laid down their lives or came home grievously wounded fighting that battle on the beaches of Normandy? And I would argue it was a shared credit. Without the brilliance of the generals, it wouldn't have happened. And without the gallantry of the soldiers, it wouldn't have happened. You put those two forces together, and we had a major victory. Thank God. And so, and by the way, when I use that analogy, when I'm blessed to be able to address members of the armed forces, I work with the Speaker's Bureau, and frequently I'm asked to address a room filled with Air Force brass, generals, colonels. One day, one of our astronauts was actually in attendance, which really blew me away. And I generally get a standing ovation. Nobody argues with the idea that if you didn't have dedicated employees, companies would fail. If companies fail to have good leadership, they also fail. Everyone should be part of the same team pushing in the same direction. Of course, the workers want more money and the employers don't want to pay it. And we can get into all those arguments, and that's fine. That's how it works. It's a negotiation. But to watch a party today in power that is releasing criminals onto the street, that is enticing record numbers of illegal aliens to pour across our borders without any way of knowing who they are, without any ability to absorb them. You know, if you really want to talk about being green, and for me, green for these people is really green as in money, but each person who comes into this country, I don't care where they're from, this isn't about race, every human being has an environmental footprint. We have a drought in the West. I did a little bit of studying on this, a little bit of research, and it's estimated that every person in the country requires roughly 100 gallons of water per day. Just let's think about that for a moment. 100 gallons of water. There are estimates that upwards of 3 million illegal aliens have flowed into the United States. Okay? Do the math. Those 3 million require 100 gallons of water every day. That is 300 million gallons of water. What are we doing? How thin can we slice the pizza when you invite folks over for pizza? Then we have the issue of inflation and supply chain issues and housing. And not only the coronavirus, but now we're looking at monkeypox. And we have the first case in nearly a decade of polio here in New York, believed to have been brought in by someone from outside the United States. And then you've got the problem of the gangs. And no one wants to talk about how much of the crime that we're witnessing is being committed by criminal aliens. And we get this nonsense, this BS, oh, the immigrants don't commit crime. Well, you know, you mentioned my background. I was the first INS agent assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division of DEA back in the late 80s. And one of the nice things about being the first person to hold a job is I was able to kind of shape it the way I thought it should be. And I was there to help the Drug Enforcement Administration and other agencies, including local and state police, the FBI, ATF, even foreign governments. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, British Customs all had representatives up there. It was paradise. I actually didn't want to leave the assignment. The only way I could leave the assignment was to accept a promotion to senior special agent that is to be assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force. It was a tough decision because I loved my assignment. I was sitting in the catbird seat, you know. But there I was in the crow's nest because I had access to all of the major cases DEA was doing around the world. I knew of every investigation in New York. I could go out and hit the streets with the agents, whether it was to make an arrest, make a buy, interrogate an informant. I mean, it was paradise. I loved my assignment. But one of the things I said is, you know what? While I'm here helping DEA, maybe they can help us. So I asked them, who are you arresting? And they sent me the arrest records. And in those days, it wasn't a spreadsheet. It was physical records. And it took about a week, and I came to work. And you would have laughed your tail off. Because I come into my office and I can't find my desk because on top of my desk are boxes filled to the ceiling, up to the ceiling, filled with paper arrest reports on my chair, under my desk, under my chair, and completely around my desk are more boxes stacked to the ceiling. Could you picture that? And so as I'm standing there scratching my head saying, how do I dig out of this mess? A couple of clerks in the file room with hand trucks were bringing in more boxes and more arrest reports. And it took me a few months to dig through it because as I'm tabulating, they're bringing me more boxes and more arrest reports. Be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. And what I found out, and it was shocking, in New York City, and this was back in the late 80s, 60% of the people being arrested by DEA to drug trafficking crimes. And remember, DEA doesn't arrest somebody with a joint. They don't even arrest someone generally with a kilo or two. They're looking for tonnage. They're looking for huge shipments of heroin and meth, and you name it, and guns like you wouldn't believe, arsenals. 60% of the people that DEA was arresting in New York were identified as foreign-born. Foreign-born. Not just Latin America, but Asia, the Caribbean, and elsewhere, China. And nationally, it was 30%. And no matter how bad the illegal immigration situation is, believe me, they don't account for 30% of the population, let alone 60% of the population. So the takeaway is that illegal aliens are many times more likely to engage in criminal activity. Lawful immigrants are more likely to not engage than even U.S. citizens if they are fearful of losing their green cards. But illegal aliens have nothing to lose, and that's how they saw it. And, you know, people that smuggled drugs smuggled people and backwards as well. So there was a clear nexus between immigration, borders, drugs, terrorism, organized crime, transnational gangs. Shocking. So when you hear this nonsense, well, the immigrants don't commit crime. No, illegal aliens do, and it's not just the crime of being here illegally. And if they were deported and come back, by the way, and everyone says, oh, it's an administrative violation. No, it's not. If you're deported and you have a criminal history and you come back, you're looking at 20 years in jail. And that law is a law that I'm very proud of because I actually worked with then-Senator Al D'Amato in the early 80s to create that law, along with Walter Connery. We didn't know of our efforts. He was the head of investigations for the New York office of the INS back then. He was a retired cop. He was a deputy inspector for internal affairs for the NYPD. He had a law degree. He went on to become the head of internal affairs for immigration in D.C., locked horns with the bosses in Washington. And they said, well, if you want to stay with us, go to New York and run the investigations program, which he did. And we became good friends. He became a mentor to me. So he sent D'Amato a legislative initiative to make reentry by criminals a 20-year felony max, because up until then, it was only 2 years in jail. They never took into account criminal history. So these are crimes that we're talking about. So I'm looking at the Democrat Party. They want bail reform. They don't want anybody to go to jail. They want to take guns off the street. Why don't they want to take criminals off the street? When drunk drivers or reckless drivers or unlicensed drivers kill people, nobody ever says we need car control, right? They say we've got to crack down on the drivers. On Queens Boulevard in New York, we called it the Boulevard of Death. It was probably the only thing worthwhile that Mayor Dumb Blasio, as I came to call him, Dumb Blasio, did. People were getting killed every week on Queens Boulevard. It was a major thoroughfare, super wide, like 12 lanes. No one could get across the street fast enough. And these idiots behind the wheel would just jam on the gas pedal and mow people down, including women wheeling baby carriages, if you could imagine that level of stupidity. So what they did was they lowered the speed limit from 30 to 25. They put up radar detectors. They stationed police officers under these big signs that told people how fast they were going. And if you went by more than 5 miles an hour over the limit, that cop would chase you down and give you a ticket or maybe even lock you up. Within 2 weeks, we had zero fatalities on Queens Boulevard. They weren't controlling the cars. They were going after the idiot drivers. So when you say we're going to have gun control because the guns are dangerous, understand something. All that that means is that people who are law-abiding won't be able to defend themselves because by the nature of being law-abiding, they won't carry guns. Guess who doesn't care about the laws? The criminals. And do you think there's a problem getting your hands on a gun if you're determined to get... The drugs are illegal. Is there any problem for anyone to buy drugs in this country? So all you're doing is preventing law-abiding, decent Americans from being able to defend themselves, guaranteeing that criminals who have firearms will not face armed intervention by a good guy with a gun. How does that make us safer? What am I missing here, James?
You're not missing a thing, Mike. And you know, back with what you were talking about with the number of illegal people in the country illegally committing crimes, I can remember you saying on more than one occasion that when these people disappear, into the country, when they come into the United States, they're going to move into communities of their people. They're going to move into communities where there's going to be a lot of people where they came from. Right, and so I guess a lot of these crimes that are being committed beyond the drug offenses, they're also committing a lot of other crimes against people from their own countries.
Yeah, they do, and I'll tell you how bad it is. And again, I didn't read about it. I'm so sick of the talking heads on all the TV shows. You know, we're talking about national security, public safety. These are important issues. If you want to have a program and discuss what flavor ice cream is worthwhile or what movie people should go see, well, I don't care who makes statements. Go out there and, run your mouth. I don't care. But if you're going to talk about national security, just as though if you're going to talk about the military, for example, or health-related issues, if the news channels were really news channels, instead of the dynamic panels, and they give it all kinds of flashy names, and they bring on, the political consultants to flap their lips, if you're going to talk about substantive issues, military, health, law enforcement, my contention is no one should be in front of the camera who would not qualify as an expert witness either at a trial or a congressional hearing. Because otherwise, you have people sitting in front of TV cameras misleading the American people. And I'm so sick of it. And I've been on programs, right after 9/11, people asked me what I thought about our sending troops to Afghanistan. And I said, listen, I'm not going to answer any questions about the military. I've never been in the armed forces. I don't know what President Bush back then knew or when he knew it. It would be ridiculous for me to run my mouth. Do I have opinions? Of course. I also have a backside, and so does everyone else. We all have backsides, and we all have opinions. The only opinions I'm willing to share with you are those opinions that relate back to my 30-plus years of experience with the old INS. Why in the world would anyone want to take seriously anything that I would say about the military? Why don't you have me come on and talk about brain surgery? Because I'm just as capable of doing that. But look at who gets in front of the cameras and misleads the American people. And they might be bright, they might be smart, they might be decent, they might be moral, but they're not knowledgeable, and they have no idea what they're saying. I remember Charles Krauthammer, for whom I had tremendous respect. You know, his story was truly inspirational. For those of you not familiar with Charles, he was a regular on Fox News. He had a degree in psychiatry. He was a medical doctor. And in a diving incident, he hit his head on the bottom of a swimming pool and fractured his neck and wound up as a quadriplegic. And he really was brilliant and articulate, but he would sit there talking about immigration with absolutely nothing to back up anything he said. And I remember one day he was part of a panel conversation with a bunch of other reporters who knew nothing about immigration, frankly. And what was he saying? Well, it's only reasonable that if someone's been living in the United States for 7 years, I don't know where he got the number seven. It could have been six. It could have been 12. It could have been 3 weeks and 7 months. I have no idea where they get these numbers. Then it's only fair that we allow them to stay and give them legal status. There is so much wrong with that statement. But there was nobody on that set in front of those cameras providing a different perspective, because I was screaming at the television, Charles, how do you know how long an illegal alien has been living in the United States? If they run the border, there is no record of entry. And we're talking about numbers that are so huge, there will be zero interviews and zero field investigations. So all that hapless adjudicator will have to go on is the answers provided by the applicant for legalization. Think about that. And by the way, I spent a year as an adjudications officer. So when I speak about the stuff, I did every one of those jobs. I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport for 4 years. I did the marriage interviews. One day we have to just talk about some of the funny things that happened when I did the marriage interviews. Just to give you two quick ones, I remember one time because we would put the people under oath, I'd say, please raise your right hand, and the woman kept raising her left hand. It turned out she was a lefty and wrote a crib sheet in the palm of her right hand. Okay, think about that. And there are many other stories like that. Then I would ask to see the keys to see if the keys match. And by the way, the grapevine is very effective, because these folks, they have to take immigration seriously. They didn't want to be deported. So you were always playing cat and mouse, spy versus spy. You're always doing one thing and they try to, you know, figure it out. And so it was always a challenge. It was a fun assignment. It was challenging. And I would say, let me see your keys. So this guy comes in, he immediately puts his keys down on the table. He said, I heard you were the guy that wanted to see the house keys. And I said, well, how did you get here today? He said, I drove. I said, where did you park your car? He said, across the street. I said, that's a park and a lock, isn't it? He said, yeah, it is. So they gave you back your car keys. He said, yes, they did. I said, well, if you look at your keychain, there's no car keys here. Could you please show me your car keys? And the guy turns to his lawyer and he says, do I really have to show the car keys? And this was the American who had petitioned for this woman. And the lawyer says, you don't have to, but he's just going to deny the application. So with great reluctance, he took out the keys from the car. And lo and behold, attached to the car keys were more house keys, but not the same house keys. And the lawyer is sitting there with his mouth hanging open. And I said, whose house keys are these? Not knowing what to say, he says, well, they belong to my girlfriend. You're what? You're here with your wife? I mean, obviously, he wasn't living with the woman. We denied the petition.
I got to come up with something.
Yeah, but you know what? It was such a great experience. And I had suggested that nobody should be able to go and become an agent without serving at least 6 months as an inspector at the airport, because I saw more passports in 1 week at the airport than I would see in my entire career as an agent. Think how valuable that is. And as an adjudicator, I learned so much, and if you were doing an investigation into fraud, you knew what the adjudicators were looking for in order to make a proper decision about approving or denying an application. To me, it should have been like an internship. I had a good friend who was an oral surgeon, but because he was an MD, he had to do autopsies. He helped deliver babies. He did a full surgical residence at the hospital. He wound up as chief resident of oral surgery in a major New York hospital. But he rotated through all of the various services within the hospital. And I said, why is that? He said, Mike, if I put somebody under anesthesia and their heart stops, I better know how to restart their heart or they're going to take a dead body out of my office. And I said, wow, I never thought of that. He said, but it's a very real possibility. It does happen. So they do a complete rotation so they're as well-rounded and familiar with as many areas as possible because lives are on the line. Well, as you saw on 9/11, when you talk about immigration, lives are once again on the line. And you have gangs coming in and drugs coming in. My goodness, we need to take this seriously. And nobody ever wanted to take immigration seriously. And, you know, when you stop and think about it, and again, going back to the days that I addressed members of the armed forces, I like to make the point that the common shared mission of our armed forces, and I don't care if it's the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, whatever, the shared mission is to keep the enemies of America as far from our shores as possible. But guess who gets that baton up close and in person? It's passed to the Border Patrol and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's how serious this mission is. And no one even thinks about that. And I will tell you that after delivering a presentation on more than one occasion, I've had generals in the U.S. Air Force come up to me and say, you know, Mr. Cutler, I'm embarrassed to tell you this, but I never thought about immigration from the perspective of military and national security, but you're 100% right. He said, I will never think of immigration the same way. He said, but you're completely correct. I said, yes, think about 9/11. Hit us with cruise missiles, not with Raptors or Predators, but with airliners that became de facto cruise missiles. And the horror was that there were people on those airplanes, innocent civilians, and those planes were used as missiles to take down buildings. No different than shooting a cruise missile at it, and they were able to do it because they were able to enter the United States. I want someone to challenge what I just said. What do you think of that?
I don't know how they could.
Can you challenge that? You see my point? So
yeah,
how in
absolutely.
The world... How in the world do we allow this BS to occur on us? You know, the government isn't doing anything in our favor right now. Nothing. Bupkis.
No.
And again, I will tell you, I am a lifelong registered Democrat, the party that used to look out for the well-being of workers. How are you looking out for the well-being of workers when you're hiring an army of competing workers with the sole purpose of driving down wages and displacing Americans? And both parties want to do it, by the way. When I hear this garbage from the likes of Ted Cruz, we need to bring in the world's best and brightest so America can lead, that should get you thrown out of office. I'm a New Yorker, and in New York, as I told Ted Cruz that he pushed me and it damn near got ugly back in 2013, we both delivered a speech at an open-air meeting outside the White House, and he said, we've got to bring in the world's best and brightest. I said, you know, I'm from Brooklyn, and where I come from, we have a term for the world's best and brightest. We call them Americans. And he went bananas, and he pushed me, and he went from big smile to scowling. He said, I need to speak to people at that fence or in my way, and pushed me. It came very close. Why? I'm old enough to remember. I'm in my early 70s. When Sputnik was launched, I was in the fifth grade. And I thought it was a great thing because as a kid, I knew nothing about enemies. I was big on astronomy going back to when I was in third grade. And I remember saying to my father, isn't that amazing? There's an artificial satellite orbiting the Earth. And my dad, may he rest in peace, said to me, Mike, that's not good news. Russia is our enemy. If they could put a satellite up there, they could put a bomb up there. And it shocked me. But what amazed me was over the weekend, President Eisenhower made the proclamation that given the challenge we face to the space program from the Soviet Union, every American child would get a first-rate education, specifically in math and science, so that America continued to lead and be the voice of freedom, the force for freedom. And when I came to school on Monday, my teachers called me in and they said, well, you've been into astronomy, you love science. We don't have science teachers. They're going to get us some science teachers, but it's going to take a couple of months. Would you mind teaching science for an hour a week on Thursdays? I remember it like yesterday. So my dad and I went to a green grocer. We got a couple of orange crates. He hammered them together. I painted them. I hung a sign on it. We called it the Science Corner. And we doubled up. The kids in the class next door came into our class. And on Thursdays, I would talk about astronomy. I would talk about how airplanes work, how rockets work. Whatever the topic, the teachers would tell me what they wanted me to discuss in front of the class. And after about 3 or 4 months, they rushed licensed science teachers into service, and I could sit down and enjoy the lessons, which were much better than my lessons by a professional teacher. But Eisenhower didn't say, quick, get me the, we're going to call India, we're going to call England, we're going to call Germany. No. And by the way, for those of you who are going to say, well, he said Germany and, the, you know, von Braun, well, that's right. We did bring in a select number of foreign nationals who were true experts in the field. And boy, if you want to talk about having to hold your nose, Wernher von Braun was a war criminal. Let's be very clear. He and his cohorts at Peenemünde used their abilities as engineers and scientists to build the V-1, which was basically the first cruise missile. It had a ramjet engine, made a buzzing noise when it flew. That's why it was called a buzz bomb. And the V-2, which was the predecessor of the Redstone rocket, and they named it Redstone because von Braun worked at the Redstone Arsenal when he came to the United States. It was a liquid-fueled rocket that would go supersonic, so nobody heard the V-2. All they would hear was the kaboom when it hit the ground and blew up. And they were targeting London, the civilian population, with both weapons. These weren't precision munitions the way we do it today. This was the idea of hitting the civilian population, killing as many men, women, and children as possible to destroy the will of the Brits to continue the war against Germany. If this wasn't an act of terrorism, and by the way, for good measure, they used slave labor. And von Braun got the highest military award from Adolf Hitler himself. So I'm happy he helped us get to the moon. I'm still a very big fan of the space program. I met a bunch of our astronauts, Jim Lovell, Dave Scott, Jim McDivitt. I'm right now looking at a photo on the wall of my office at home of myself with Gene Kranz, who was flight director for Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and the space shuttle program. But let's teach history the way it happened. Let's not sugarcoat it. Let's agree. And by the way, when people say that we need to teach all of history, I agree. Don't just cherry pick and say we're horrible because we have slavery. Slavery was an atrocity. It was horrible. It is immoral. There's nothing about it that I could say except that it was absolutely wrong. But having said that, realize that think of the accomplishments that we did make. I worked with a gentleman by the name of George Bing at Brooklyn College. I lost my parents to cancer while I was in college. My dad died about a year and a half before my mother did. So I worked in two jobs. I worked in a medical library. I needed the money, and I also wanted to learn as much about cancer as I could. And so working in a medical library in a hospital gave me access to the library, and the doctors there were really cool because they let me sit in on all of their conferences about breast cancer. After a while, they said they thought I probably knew more about breast cancer than they did. But I also worked in the audiovisual center at Brooklyn College. And one of the things that I did there was to work as a photographer's assistant plus as a projectionist. And I also did the soundboard in the auditorium for shows and so forth. And we had a German guy who was a nasty character. When he was told that they were going to draft him and he was headed to Vietnam, he fled the country and went to Canada. And a couple of days later, in comes this black gentleman, very soft-spoken, very quiet, very decent, very humble. And one day I told him about my love of aviation. And he looked at me, he said, do you know anything about the Tuskegee Airmen? I said, I'm embarrassed to tell you I don't. I said, who were they? And he told me all about who they were. And then guess what? He told me that he was one of them. Why I wasn't taught and my fellow students weren't taught about the Tuskegee Airmen blows my mind. We absolutely should teach that. We should teach about the Ritchie Boys. And for those of you who don't know what the Ritchie Boys are, I'll tell you about that also. The Ritchie Boys were, for the most part, Jews who had came to the United States from Germany. They were in their early 20s. And, in fact, I had an orthopedic surgeon operate on both my leg and my wife's leg, a brilliant surgeon, head of knee and hip replacement at a major New York hospital. He holds patents in artificial joints. Real great guy, great doctor. And we got into this conversation one day, and he told me about his father. And he didn't use the term Ritchie Boys, but 60 Minutes did a major story. And if you look it up in their archives, it's worth watching. It turned out that as soon as they came from Germany to escape the Holocaust, his grandparents, the doctor's grandparents, his father, their son, said to his parents, he was something like 21 or 22 years old, he says, I need to go back to Germany. And they looked at him and they said, are you crazy? You're going to get yourself killed. He said, oh, I'm not going back as a German. I'm going back in uniform. I'm joining the United States Army. He said, I speak German fluently. I know the entire country. He said, who better than me to help our military defeat those SOBs? Well, it turned out, if you watch the story about the Ritchie boys, you could look them up, they call them the Ritchie boys because they all went for training at Camp Ritchie in New Jersey, where they learned spycraft, they learned how to be commandos, and they learned how to gather intelligence to conduct interrogations. And they were credited with so many successes by developing the intelligence that the military needed to carry out successful operations on the ground. And they were almost all Jews, and they had fled Germany and went back, and many of them were killed. But they went back to defeat the Nazis. So when you hear about Antifa, the anti-fascists, let me tell you who the anti-fascists were. It was my friend George Bing and his colleagues in the Tuskegee Air Force, okay? It was the Ritchie boys. It was Americans of every flavor. It was the Native Americans, the Wind Talkers, who didn't have written language, so the code couldn't be broken by the Germans. America is a big pot of stew, and we all contribute ingredients to that pot. Or perhaps you might think of it as a big orchestra, and we all have an instrument to play. And we miss the boat. Every child in America should come to understand how every American, every walk of life, every religion, every ethnicity, every racial group made so many sacrifices to preserve and defend this great democracy of ours, this great republic of ours. Why that hasn't been taught escapes any comprehension that I possibly could have. If you want to change things, let's make that a good start. So we all understand we are in this together. And to the Nimrods that are cheering the demise of America, be careful what you wish for. Because America won't just stop being America and maybe Canada will take the lead for a while or England will take. No. In the wings are some very dangerous dictatorships. China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea. And they would carve us up like a Thanksgiving turkey given half an opportunity, you see? So you have these idiots running around because they were never taught critical thinking skills. Maybe they have parent problems. Maybe they hate their parents, and the ultimate authority figure besides their father is the government. There's a lot of motivations that go into a lot of things, and I'm not a psychologist, don't pretend to be. But whatever it is, whatever bug crawled up that tailpipe and set up a colony, they better face the cold reality. The cold reality is that they are attempting to dismantle the greatest democracy the world has ever known. And for those conservatives who get twisted panties when they hear the word democracy, yes, this is a democracy. It's a Republican form of democracy. There are various forms of democracy. But the idea behind democracy, it comes from the Greek term of the people. The power for the government comes from the people, not from some royalty, okay? That's the point. Government of the people, by the people, for the people. That's what democracy means. What would fill the vacuum if, God forbid, America faltered? They are playing a dangerous game. Maybe they had a flawed upbringing. I don't know. My parents taught me to question everything and anything. Voltaire said you judge a person's intelligence by the questions they ask. And the language has been a weapon used against us by some very shrewd people who hate America. Never underestimate your opponents. And I made an observation a couple of days ago, and some people got really excited. I did a speaking engagement. And I said, you know, it used to be when a new product came out, when a new company was formed, you know, Apple or General Motors, or name whatever company. And you could say that it was earth-shaking or revolutionary. There's all kinds of terms Madison Avenue would use to describe a new product or a new company, right? All of a sudden, right, there's only one word that gets used to describe something that's brand new. And what's the word? And this word has troubled me for quite a while because they're signaling their punch. This is a roundhouse punch. The word they've been using is disruptive. How in the world is being disruptive a positive? You're a school teacher. If there was a kid in your class who's disruptive, is that something that you want, James?
No, because disruption leads to distraction or redirection.
And chaos.
And no, this is not something you want to know. It's not. It's not good. There's not any nobility to it. They're wanting to equate that with that old phrase, speaking truth to power. But that's not true. That's not what that is at all.
No. And so the fact that they're using that word should tell you it's a signal. This is the direction. So what do we now have? A disrupted supply chain, right? Soon there will be disruptions in the water system or in the electrical grid, disruptions. And we're being spoon-fed the notion, oh, how wonderful, disruptions are coming. Baloney. You see, if you look at what's happening, this is madness. And what's also happening at the same time is because of corporate greed, the purchasing power of the average American has been slashed. And it started long before Biden, long before Obama. When we started to bring in an army of foreign workers to displace American workers, guess what path that brought us to? The path of the destruction of the middle class. And by the way, that's exactly what they've actually talked about, believe it or not. Believe it or not. Alan Greenspan testified for Chuck Schumer. Let me see if I can bring this up real quick.
Sure.
Do I have it? It'll just take me a moment.
We're talking about this.
It was really
Michael
interesting because on April 30th, 2009, Chuck Schumer held a hearing about comprehensive immigration reform. And he brought in none other than Alan Greenspan, the former head of the Federal Reserve Bank. And he was talking about illegal immigration and how the American people don't like it. But he said, you know, they're a flexible labor force. They amount to, I don't know what it was, 10% of the workforce. And, you know, they only minimally suppress the wages of Americans without an education. But when you suppress wages of people with no education, they become homeless, right? Think about what we're really talking about. But then he went on and talked about the need to bring in, as Bill Gates wanted, basically an unlimited supply of H-1B visas. For those of you not familiar with the jargon, H-1B visas are visas given to high-tech workers. It's not just illegal immigration. You know, very often when I do speaking engagements or I'm on radio programs, and I do tons of those, people introduce me as an expert on illegal immigration. That's not right. I'm an expert on immigration. I mean, I don't like the word expert to begin with. No one has all the answers. And anyone who tells you they have all the answers, well, my parents' advice is sage advice, run for your life. But I think that because of my depth and breadth of experience and diversity of experience, I've learned quite a bit along the way. So the legal system is supposed to prevent American workers from facing foreign competition. It's right in Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182. That's one of the most important sections of the entire Immigration Act. Read it, because it will bear out the fact that this is not about race or religion or ethnicity. I will tell you, if our immigration law has made distinctions based on race, religion, or ethnicity, James, I couldn't have enforced those laws for 30 seconds, let alone 30 minutes. My family was hammered during the Holocaust, along with how many others. I was named for my mother's mother, who was slaughtered in Poland because we're Jews. I have no tolerance whatsoever for any kind of discrimination, which, by the way, is why I get very worked up when I hear this nonsense about white privilege and scapegoating white people by other people, because the Jews were the ones who got scapegoated in Nazi Germany, and it led to the Holocaust. That tactic is dangerous, okay? And it's done out of malevolence. And people need to understand that. We should never be scapegoating anyone or identify people about those things that they have no control over. We hold people accountable for their actions, not for their appearance. I mean, it's kind of like saying, you need to go to jail because you have blue eyes. Well, why? Why is that a problem? Just because. Because you have privilege with blue eyes. Really? That's what they're doing. I mean, stop and think about the dangerousness of all of this. My parents taught me, by the way, that I would face anti-Semitism, and said, I have. And there are people that are just plain stupid. And by the way, any group can be racist. It's not just white. Any flavor can be, you know, prejudiced against another group of people. I've seen it across the board. This is stupidity. This is what happens when you have a vacuum of intelligence. You have no brains in your head. You're going to say stupid things and look at people in ways that you never should. Life is a tough proposition. We should be here rooting each other on, trying to help each other any way that we can. You know, my mother, may she rest in peace, said to me, we all hang by threads and it doesn't take much for the thread to break. So when you have people that will point the finger and say, oh, here's white privilege, what does that even mean? My mother came to America as a 13-year-old. We're white, okay? She lived in a rooming house by herself, couldn't speak the language, supported herself by working in a sweatshop making umbrellas for $3 a week. Is that a demonstration of white privilege? Think about that. She had a fourth-grade education but went on to become the chief buyer at a dress company during the Depression that was so successful. Her boss, who became one of Roosevelt's dollar-a-year men because he was so successful, frequently pointed to my mother as the reason he was successful. What was it my mother did? She worked her tail off. And she was very smart. There's a world of difference between being educated and being smart. My dad was a tradesman. And in my world, tradesmen rock. Without tradesmen, we would have no houses, no roads, no cars. We'd be living in caves and under trees. Tradesmen are behind everything that we touch and use, whether it's the people in the factories, the construction workers. My dad was a plumber on new construction, worked on the World's Fair, worked on Kennedy Airport. I used to go with him on his job. And what he did to me was magic. He'd show me a hole in the ground, and we'd come back a week later, and the foundation would be in. And a couple of weeks later, the first floor would be in. And suddenly this building would emerge from the ground like a plant growing out of a flower pot. And I used to love to walk by construction sites. You could smell the smells of the freshly turned soil. And hear what I call the orchestra of the hammering and sawing and all those noises that we associate with a construction site. You know, to this day, James, if I get choked up, bear with me, I can't walk by a construction site without imagining that I could see my dad somehow in that building. Because I grew up among these construction workers for whom no job was too dangerous or backbreaking or difficult or filthy. And then you hear these politicians talk about the work Americans won't do. Any politician who uses that expression needs to be voted out of office, and I don't care if they're coming from the Flying Hopping Kangaroo Party, okay? Americans need to show respect for anybody and everybody who does an honest day's work and provides a service or a product or something that we, the people of the United States, need. How we've allowed this lunacy to take hold in our country is beyond my comprehension, but we need to haul it back and stop it forthwith. This is dangerous. And when you have an Alan Greenspan, piece of work that he is, standing in front of a hearing that the media refused to cover and talked about the benefits to flooding America with high-tech workers, programmers and biochemists and technicians, engineers, really? We need to import those? Really? And what he said was that there are two benefits to doing this. He said, first, the skilled workers and their families form new households. They will, of necessity, move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is the pricing crisis of American homes. No, I love the term vacant housing units. I can just see the Norman Rockwell painting. These are houses lost to foreclosure, okay? Yes. And then he says that, of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and the plunge in value of the vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. That's more fertilizer. It was his subprime mortgages that did that, and there have been a whole bunch of studies about the damage that Greenspan did to the American economy, former Reserve Chairman, okay? Now, that's bad. But the next one, if you have high blood pressure issues, take your pill now and avoid the rush later. The second bonus, he said, would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. What does that mean? Well, apparently Greenspan is upset because someone's getting too wealthy. He's not talking about himself or Gates or Zuckerberg. No. Who's he talking about? Well, let's see. The second bonus would address the increasing concentration of income in this country, greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled. These are aliens we're talking about, folks, right? Quotas for the highly skilled would lower the wage premiums of the skilled over the lesser skilled. This is a prescription. This is a blueprint to destroying the middle class. So we will lower the wage premiums of skilled over the lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we're shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Let me just stop and make a point. The immigration laws specifically do exactly that, shield American workers from foreign competition.
Right.
And by the way, that goes back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt. During the Depression, he said, we will enforce immigration laws to make damn sure that Americans don't compete with foreign workers who will work for unfair wages and don't displace American workers who need the jobs, okay? That's as democratic as it gets. So now you've got Schumer calling on Greenspan, touting, we've got to get rid of the shielding that protects American workers. And when you hear people in Congress saying, we have to modernize the immigration laws, that is exactly what they're focused on. We need to be able to fire every American and hire foreign workers because they will work for less money with fewer benefits under adverse conditions. So much for the American dream, and the middle class is at the heart and soul of America and the American dream. So what we're talking about from both parties is kill the middle class. So if you wonder why some people are disenchanted with what they think is capitalism, wonder no more. It's not working for all too many Americans. Think about the price of a house and what people earn and whether or not the average American can even aspire to own a modest house. With two cars in the driveway, most people lease. They can't even afford to buy a new car, okay? So you wonder why vast numbers of Americans are disenchanted. And you know, I was on a program, I think I mentioned it a while back. The guy was a staunch conservative. And he said, you know, Mike, in capitalism, you have a guarantee of opportunity, not a guarantee of outcome. I said, you don't have a guarantee of opportunity when Americans are being displaced by foreign workers, and you most certainly do have a guarantee of outcome in America. And he got really nasty with me, and it was on his own program, and he said to me, you better be able to back it up. I said, well, I can do it with just two words. And he said, I doubt that. What two words? Of course, the two words were golden parachute. You have Nimrods like Jeffrey Immel and others who have run companies into the ground. The guy that ran Boeing and wanted to keep the MAX jets flying even after two of them made huge holes in the ground and killed hundreds of people. So they relieved him. And as he walked out the door, they handed these guys tens of millions of dollars. If that isn't a guarantee of outcome, I want someone to redefine the words. Am I getting anything wrong here, James?
Absolutely not, and it goes on all the time. It has for a long, long time. I mean, basically
right.
What
so
they're doing,
why
they bring these guys in, they're saying, we're going to give you X amount. We are going to make you richer than Creepus for failing.
Yes, and it won't matter. Don't worry about a thing. We got your back.
Yeah.
And then when these companies screw up and they start firing people, the people that came in at the crack of dawn and skipped lunch and skipped dinner and worked till 9 o'clock at night are fired, and they're escorted to their desk by an armed security guard to make certain they don't take a pen with the company logo on it, and certainly not the company stapler. Think about that. We've got to go back to representing the American people. Not corporations, but the American people. But let me just finish the Greenspan quote, because this really drove me up the wall when I heard it. I had to go check the transcript because I thought maybe I misheard what he said. Greenspan said that skill shortages in America exist because we're shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, catch this term, ladies and gentlemen, we have created a privileged elite whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. What was he saying? He said, if you could make Americans compete with foreign workers from the third world, instead of paying a programmer, let's say, $150,000 a year, we could pay him $70,000 a year. And then the gap between Americans with skills and advanced educations will narrow greatly, right? And he calls these middle-class, high-tech workers who spent a fortune on an education, still paying off student loans, and he calls them
elite.
Privileged elite. If that doesn't rev your motor, check for pulse. So understand what's been going on. And now you've got Biden flooding America with millions of people. We have no idea who they are. This violates the 9/11 Commission. And recently, and I just wrote an article, I hope after your program everybody will go to Front Page Magazine, because I wrote an article, and again, this stuff is not good if you have high blood pressure issues. My article is entitled, Biden's TSA Becomes the Transportation False Security Administration. Illegal aliens are now welcome aboard airliners using arrest warrants for ID.
Yes, that's crazy. That
Think
is
about
absolutely
what we go
crazy.
Through to get on an airplane. Could you imagine this?
Sure, I can prove who I am here. Here's my arrest warrant for attempted murder. Yeah, it's insane.
These are administrative warrants issued by immigration. Here's what you need to know, because the lie was, oh, well, we're cross-referencing the warrant with the person's name and immigration file number. So let me tell you about the real world, because you're not going to hear this from the talking heads on TV who never made an arrest in their lives. I've made hundreds and hundreds of arrests of illegal aliens. Sometimes they have 10 sets of ID and 10 different names. Sometimes they have no ID. In any event, we're clueless as to who they are. And immigration was never really serious about its work, and I raised this problem back in 97 at my first hearing about the need to have immediate biometrics. Because we used to fingerprint aliens. We would mail the fingerprint card to the FBI by snail mail, Pony Express. We would deport the alien. God forbid we should deport anybody today. We would deport them. And 3 weeks later, the FBI would call up and say, where is this guy Joe Smith from Italy? Why? Well, he's wanted for 4 homicides, 3 rapes, and a bank robbery. Oh, we deported him. Why? We want him. So eventually, because of that hearing and what I said at that hearing, they went to electronic fingerprinting the way that every other law enforcement agency operates. They've never wanted to be serious about immigration, folks. I'm telling you. These are failures by design, because immigration is a delivery system that delivers an unlimited supply of cheap exploitable labor, and as we just saw, not just the illegals, but the high-tech workers, an unlimited number of foreign tourists and foreign students, and for the immigration lawyers out there, both parties, an unlimited supply of clients. It also turns out that we are providing the non-government organizations with clients. I wrote an article about it, and they said that Mayorkas had gone as head of Homeland Security from America's guardian to America's innkeeper. Because it turned out that there was a company that got a $500 million plus, no competition, no bid contract to house the illegal aliens coming across the border. And according to the Office of Inspector General, $17 million were paid to this outfit for beds that were never used. So Judicial Watch did a bit of a study into this, and they found, interesting coincidence, that an individual had worked for the Biden administration at Homeland Security, was part of the transition team. Shortly after Biden was elected, this guy quit, and he went to work for the company that got the no-bid contract, $500+ million. Okay? That explains why they want to flood these people into the United States, if they see dollar signs, lots and lots of dollar signs, and the more aliens who come, the more money that they're going to have to pay to these non-government organizations that jokingly call themselves non-profit. If you believe that story, I have a bridge to sell you, non-profit. So in any event, there was a hearing, and the administrator of the TSA, I used to call them the Terminally Stupid Administration. One of my friends in the military called them Thousands Standing Around. But in any event, I lose my sense of humor. My mind can't be far behind. So anyway, David Pekoski is now the administrator of the Terminally Stupid Administration. And on July 21st, Senator Hawley doing God's work pushed him on the issues. And here was a quote from a Fox News report. Senator Hawley pushed the TSA chief on why he would allow illegal immigrants with such warrants onto a flight at all. Now, remember, we don't know who they are. So when you arrest them, you finally do the paperwork based on what? What they tell you. What's your name? Joe Smith. Is he really Joe Smith? Who knows? Right? We don't know. So the alien file number that they're bragging about will say Joe Smith. The name on the warrant says Joe Smith. Hey, it matches. Now, there's no biometric, by the way, on the warrant. And even if it's a fingerprint, nobody at the airport is a fingerprint expert. So they look at the paperwork, which could be a counterfeit or might be an imposter, and they let him on the airplane. Meanwhile, I've tried to get on occasion with my credentials, and they say, oh, there's no expiration date on your credentials, Mr. Cutler. We need to see a driver's license. And then they stare at your driver's license. They hold it up to the light, and they shine the light on it, and they do, oh, this guy might be dangerous. This guy walks in with a piece of paper with his name on it. Come on board. Come on down. And we have how many Americans on no-fly list? Now, many of them should be, but many of them probably shouldn't be on a no-fly list. But they're Americans, and in America, Americans get treated like trash. Think about that. But illegal aliens are golden. Free room and board. What can we do for you? You came legally? Go pay for your lawyer. You're here illegally? Oh, we'll put you up in a hotel. We'll take care of your children. Who are we trying to attract? What alien in his or her right mind would come to America legally when we are letting anybody in from anywhere with no clue as to who they are or why they're here? I wouldn't want to come to this country if I wasn't an American. I'd find someplace else to go. You want to talk about attracting the world's best and brightest? You cannot be particularly bright if you come to America given the current circumstances. What do you think of that statement, James?
I think you're right on. I think that we shouldn't have, you know, just a couple of years ago, we were energy independent. And I think that we ought to be intellectually independent when it comes to this stuff. You've mentioned the best and brightest that we're looking for. And they're all over this country. Space program. Let's just go back to Project Mercury, Mike. Let's just look at that.
Yep.
Everybody there was home, except for our Germans. Everybody was homegrown.
Yep.
Here, United States, born and bred and educated.
Yep. And if you look at hidden figures, by the way, the black women, I'm glad they did the piece about the hidden figures, the black women who were, they called them computers. They actually were the mathematicians who used calculators to plot the trajectories for the astronauts. These are the stories that should be taught in our school, that in America, anyone can overcome. My parents said you're going to encounter anti-Semitism. You know what the solution is, they told me? Study hard, work hard, be so damn good at whatever you do for a living that even the idiots who don't like you will have to respect you, hire you, and pay you what you're worth. And they said over time, maybe they'll wake up to reality and stop being stupid. That's what my parents taught me, both of them. Were they right or wrong? I think they were spot on. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So let me read.
If you
this. Want to
read
this excerpt. I just want to read this excerpt between Senator Hawley and the head of the Terminally Stupid Administration. So Senator Hawley pushed the TSA chief on why he would allow illegal immigrants with such a warrant onto a flight at all. Quote, we aren't looking at whether a person is legal or illegal in the country, said. Our role is to make sure that the people who may pose a risk to transportation that is significant enough to require enhanced screening or to not allow them to fly. How do you know who they are? That's the point. This guy runs the agency. Can you think of anything dumber? And then Pauly says, so your position is that someone who is known to have violated the laws of the United States does not thereby need enhanced screening, Hawley said. Sir, there are people who violate the laws of the United States every day who fly. Pekoski responded, we look for things related to transportation security. While Pekoski again stressed the warrant is the beginning of an identity verification process that follows, Hawley was not convinced. And here's Hawley's final quote. I think you're going to have a hard time explaining to folks who wait for all of the time on those lines, who subject themselves voluntarily to the restrictions you impose, that you're allowing illegal aliens with warrants for arrest to get on airplanes. And by the way, under Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324, which talks about smuggling, harboring, and so forth, illegal aliens, it also identifies transporting illegal aliens as a felony. Now, here's my question. If I'm going to err, I will err on the side of caution, okay? And if I'm going to make a decision of significance, and we all probably do this, I think we do, you make a list of pros and cons. If I do this, then this is the positive, this is the negative, right? If I buy a stick shift, if I buy an automatic, whatever we do, we draw two lists, good and bad, right? I want to know what the good is for America by allowing illegal aliens and warrants to get on airplanes in the first place. Is that not a reasonable question?
It's a very reasonable question, and I doubt anybody's going to be able to give you an answer.
And that's the problem.
But we know what
the answer is. Accountability. There is no accountability. And now you've got members of Congress that are trying to come up with a law that would prevent this. Why do you need a law to prevent it when the 9/11 Commission was crystal clear? And finally, Hawley and other members of Congress are identifying the 9/11 Commission report and saying this violates the report. And the Nimrod, who's running TSA, you know, kind of shuffled and had no answer after 9/11. But then again, you have to understand that this administration, DHS, is worried about terrorism because they're going after parents who might oppose the curriculum at a school board meeting. So that's where the focus is. Not people that want to blow up America, but people that might want to blow up a curriculum for teaching kids things that they shouldn't be getting taught. You know, like second graders should be taught about cross-dressing and homosexuality. Sure thing. I mean, stop and think about what's happening. Stop and think about how in New York there are signs on the subways advising people on how to use dangerous illegal drugs safely. We're talking about crack and heroin. Why in the world, meth, why would you be instructing people on how to use meth and crack and heroin safely when it's illegal? It's a felony to possess those substances. Why are there no commercials on TV the way they did for cigarettes warning about drug use? I have a challenge for the Republicans who are out there. Ready for the challenge? You want to prove to the American
Absolutely.
People that you really stand with them, not with the Democrats? Why aren't you, as a political entity, running commercials every half hour on every network? You certainly have deep enough pockets from all that money you get from all those contributors. Maybe they wouldn't like the idea, however. So why aren't you funding 30-second spots every half hour, every 15 minutes, don't use drugs because, and show people and what happened to them when they did use drugs? And by the way, you want to talk about mass shootings? I have an interesting question. And interestingly, there was an article in The Atlantic, and those of you not familiar with The Atlantic, it is a super left-wing publication. And this individual wrote an article about why we have violence in America today. There was nothing in there about gun control. He talked about COVID, the lockdown, the isolation, talked about drugs. See, here's what I'd like, and maybe the Republicans can do this if they win control. How about doing a study about toxicology for anybody and everybody who pulls the trigger in a shooting, whether it's a single-person shot or a mass shooting? I'd like the public to know whether this person has been using drugs which may have contributed to mental illness, because if you keep using these drugs, it will affect your brain. I remember many times, because again, I was part of the drug task force. I arrested murderers and fugitives where they would warn us at the briefing, this guy has mental issues. He's been using meth. He's been using heroin for many years. He has been identified as having mental illness, right? He's super violent. He has nothing to lose. He's looking at life in jail. Be mindful when you go through that door, he'd rather shoot it out with you than let you take him into custody, because this guy's crazy, and he's crazy from using drugs. So I'd like to know, for those people who are worried about mass shootings, and I certainly am. I took a lot of guns off the street as an agent. I want to know what the toxicology report looks like. What do you think of that? I want to know whether this person had drugs in his system or her system, or if this person had prior arrests for possession and use of drugs. We need to start to connect the dots. The other problem that we have to look at, Hollywood, they do product endorsements all the time, right? How many times do you see some celebrity hawking something or other? Shaving cream, sneakers, a sports shirt, cologne. And very often they have no real expertise. It's like the talking heads on TV. You know, if Mario Andretti recommends an engine oil, or if Mario Andretti recommends a brand of tire, I'm going to listen to Mario. He's probably the most successful and experienced race car driver in history. He's an expert. But if Mario Andretti tells us what shaving cream to buy, that's not going to influence me. Maybe a dermatologist would, okay? But people pay a lot of attention to product endorsements. Look at the movies. How many movies involve violence, guns, explosions, cars flying through the air, dismembered bodies flying through windows? How many? Is that not a product endorsement for violence, guns, and methods of destruction and death? And then these same actors that make a bazillion dollars by pretending to be somebody they aren't scream about guns and gun violence even while they pull the trigger repeatedly on the set. People like Alec Baldwin, who's obviously an expert on gun safety, obviously. Right? The brilliant Alec Baldwin.
Absolutely.
I know that he took some really good NRA classes on gun safety. Can't you tell? So yeah. Understand the point. I'm sorry. I'm on a roll being a Jew from Brooklyn. I'm on a bagel. But I'm furious. I'm furious. Am I right or wrong in what I'm saying?
No, you're right in what you're saying. And unless at some level, because it's got to start somewhere, there has to be a revival of accountability in this country. Whether it's on, maybe it's better if you start in at the school boards and work your way up, but it's got to start somewhere.
But that's why the FBI is revving their motor to go after any parent who would go after the curriculum. And you know, in the old days, and I don't like censorship, I really don't, I'm a libertarian, I want to let people speak hate speech. You know why? Because I want to know who these yo-yos are. And Alan Dershowitz made the very same point. I want to give these idiots enough rope so they can hang themselves, okay? I want to out them. Let them out themselves, okay? But the point is there used to be standards and practices where you couldn't show certain things in the movie. There was a whole list in the 30s. You can't show the inner contour of a woman's thigh. You can't show law enforcement being defeated. You can't show, I believe, dismembered bodies. There was a whole list of what you could or couldn't show. I don't like censorship. But the point was they understood the impact that movies have on public perception. And we've become desensitized to violence through these movies. And then, if that isn't bad enough, what do we have now? Virtual reality and video games that are basically simulators for mass casualty events. Are they not? You go into a room with a gun. Yeah. You spray bullets and mow people down. Is that not a simulator for a mass casualty event?
Absolutely it is. And then they steal a vehicle. And all this is glorified.
And all these other games.
Exactly. And the more you kill, the better you are at the game.
The highest score you get. Right.
Right.
So what are we doing? And then you have kids who are on their own. You know, I made a point of always watching the movies with my kids. You know, I've had a firearm since 1975 when I first became an agent. And I worried because we had a horror situation, a real horrible situation in New York. The DEA agent was in the middle of getting dressed. The phone rang. His boss called him up to tell him something or other. He put the gun down. His four-year-old picked up the gun, and I'm not going to go beyond that. You know what happened.
Right.
And all of us walked into DEA that day, and we were all crying. Whether we knew the agent knew, it didn't matter. We were done. Nothing got done that day at DEA. we all just found ourselves sitting at our desks and crying hysterically. So I said, you know what? I'm going to redouble my effort. And what I did with my son is I would triple check that it was unloaded, triple check. And then I left it on the bed in the bedroom, and I didn't say anything to him. And he was about 5 years old at the time. And I warned him. I said, if you ever see a gun, don't touch it. Don't go near it. It can go off. And then I had him watch a movie with me, and I turned up the volume. Where out of nowhere, the guy comes around the corner, and some guy shoots him, and there's blood everywhere, and it's real loud, and the guy is down, and he's dead. And I played that thing for him. I said, oh, I got something I want you to see. And he screamed, and he cried. He says, oh, my God, what happened? I said, well, someone pulled the trigger, and you can't unpull the trigger. And he said, but that's scary. I said, it is scary. It's absolutely, it's terrifying. It's not scary. If I ever make a mistake, I don't want you to touch it. Just come and tell me that I'm stupid. Because if I leave it unattended, I'm stupid. So 2 days later, I left my gun, triple checked, unloaded, on my bed. I was sitting in the living room. My son came running in. He says, Dad, remember to tell, I should tell you when you're stupid? I said, yep, you're stupid. And he told me what he found on the bed. We've got to be careful. And by the way, I'm not supporting the NRA, or I'm not knocking them or one way or the other. But their gun safety programs are essential. And they have a reputation for having the best gun safety programs. That's what we should be emphasizing. That's what we should be emphasizing. Not, we need to get the guns off the street. You can't. You can't make guns go away by passing a law. You know, the laws of nature are immutable. The speed of light is not determined by a cop with a radar gun and a summons book, okay? It's determined by God or the forces of the universe. Call it whatever you want. So you can't mess with the speed of light. At least that's what Einstein told us, and he's been pretty right about everything. But man's laws are very different. The speed laws on the highway don't matter if you don't enforce the speed laws. If you could make things disappear by passing a law, then we ought to be able to pass a law against gravity and make that happen down at Cape Canaveral. You wouldn't need rockets to go into space. Rockets would just float out of the atmosphere if we could pass a law that gets rid of gravity, right? It doesn't work. And you can't pass a law that's going to get rid of the guns. It doesn't work. There will always be a way of getting contraband into the hands of the criminals. So the people you need to go after are not the law-abiding citizens, but the criminals. And you don't do it by going after the guns. You do it by going after the people who would wield those guns. What am I getting wrong here, James?
Not a thing. Been spot on all night long, just as always. I
want to be thought-provoking. I'm so tired. You know how many people have come to me and said, those assault weapons are dangerous. They got to be made illegal. And I said, and if you make them illegal, will they disappear? And people look at you with this blank look. Well, what are we supposed to do? I said, go after the idiots who would pick up one of those guns and shoot somebody for no damn reason. That's what you do. You're not going to make guns disappear. All you're going to do is make certain that law-abiding people won't be able to defend themselves. That's what you're doing. That's exactly what you're doing. Making certain that you clear the path for the criminals. I look at no gun zones around schools. That's genius. Because I know that somebody who wants to blow up a school is going to see that sign and say, oh, my God, I have a gun. I better get rid of it. And he runs to the nearest garbage can or mailbox and throws the gun there because the sign said gun-free zone. That happens all the time, doesn't it, James?
Yeah,
what
every day.
What you're telling the
every
crazy guy
day.
Is that no one's going to have a gun to defend themselves against you. Come on down. The coast is clear. That's what that sign tells these crazy people. Tell me I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. And that's why they pick those specific places for their targets.
Yes.
These well-intentioned boobs have fundamentally given them a roadmap to the best and effective way to kill their kids or to kill their grandparents or to kill the people at Walmart, you know, whatever it is.
And by the way, I don't like open carry. I'll tell you why I don't like open carry. I don't want someone to know that I carry. I don't want them to know who's carrying. Because I will tell you, if somebody comes up on me with a weapon, they're going to have a very bad day very quickly. And that's the element of surprise is something that we are, you know, hammered away at from day one at the academy. The element of surprise. Concealed carry is the way to go. Some guy comes up, and I've had a couple of off-duty instances where some guy thought he was going to mug me or whatever. Surprise, surprise. Didn't end well. Never shot anyone. I want to be clear about that. But the fact that I was in the position to defend myself made all the difference. Is that an unreasonable statement? Thank God I never had to shoot. I hope I never shoot anyone. And let me tell you, every day I went on duty, I said a little prayer that I hope I don't need my gun today. No rational person ever wants to pull the trigger on a person or even a dog. I got attacked by a dog. I couldn't bring myself to shoot the dog. It bit me in the rear end. But the dog was right. I was in his turf. We were executing a warrant, and he bit me. So I smacked him upside the head. In those days, I carried a .357, and he ran away. I mean, if he kept mauling me, if all else failed, I would have shot him. The dog was about a 75, 80-pound dog. He wasn't a small dog. But that was the last thing I wanted. No one wants to pull the trigger except at paper targets. I love shooting at the range. Never want to have to shoot another human being. And that's why, for those idiots out there that don't get it, when a police officer is involved in a shooting and the cop is not wounded, they still take him to the hospital because they know that he's been traumatized by the experience. They don't want him having a heart attack afterwards because it's happened. This isn't the Wild West, but these politicians are turning it into the Wild West. And then another point I want to talk about, and the courts have ruled against it, apparently. So you now have Mayorkas, America's innkeeper, running the Department of Homeland Surrender, right, saying, well, yeah, we're going to put technology on the border but not complete the border wall. I want everyone to understand what that means, okay? Technology has a place. But a technology basically is an alarm system. So, of course, Biden wants to have an alarm. They're not going to react to the alarm, but they could spend lots of money and maybe give it to the people that gave them campaign contributions, you see? But they don't want to finish the wall. So, you know, I love analogies, right, James? So here's my analogy. You build a gorgeous mansion, incredible, and you put it an incredible alarm system, but you don't put any doors or windows on the mansion. So anybody can saunter in. That's exactly what Mr. Mayorkas, America's innkeeper, wants. Come on down. We'll put in electronics. We're going to ignore the alarms when they go off. We're ignoring them now, unless it's to bring the welcome wagon to the location. Maybe they need a sandwich and a cold beer. You never know. Maybe these people need a brewski. Maybe they'd like to go to a nice hotel and have television, big screen. Why not? So maybe that's why they want, so that they don't miss any of these people, so they can get money for their NGOs. But believe me, they're not going to deport anybody. Why would you want to put electronics on the border but not finish the border wall? Again, look at the analogy, a house without doors, but you have an expensive burglar alarm. Does that make any sense to you or anybody else?
No, none, absolute none.
What do you think of my analogy?
Well, I think it's great. I think, but none of this is, you know, like, and like you said before, this is a delivery system. What's going on, yep, is that the U.S. government, in its way, through its policies, is basically a silent partner with all the trafficking, yep, cartels, no matter whether it's people or drugs or whatever, in facilitating this exchange that goes back and forth across the border. And these guys are making, yep, billions and billions of dollars off of it.
And then you have Republicans who say, well, we need to have comprehensive reform. Right? Why? I want everyone to understand what they're saying to you. they are saying, and these are Republicans, and remember, they started this open borders crap with Ronald Reagan. They know a lot of Republicans loved Ronald Reagan. Well, he gave us the visa waiver program, gave us the visa lottery, the diversity visa. George Herbert Walker Bush signed it into law, gave us employer sanctions, but never hired any agent. So this was cover. This was cover. And we were given a briefing from people from headquarters. They came down to New York. I remember sitting in the room, and they said, oh, we're looking about a million illegal aliens. We wound up with almost 4 million. And that number is a lie also, by the way. You know why it was a lie? Because then they ultimately brought in their kids, and they brought in their spouses, and when they became American citizens, right, they brought in their siblings and their siblings' families. So aliens, of the 4 million or 3.5 million, whatever the exact number was, probably brought in an average 4, 5, 6 more aliens each over the next few years. So suddenly, the almost 4 million becomes 20 million or 25 million. So now we're being told 11 million is probably 40 million. But if they immediately bring in their kids, and let's say we legalize 25 million, again, no interviews, no field investigations. And the number that I always like people to focus on is the number 19. 19 is a really critical historic number. And for those of you who are wondering what I mean by the number 19 being historic, it was 19 terrorists on 9/11 who killed more people than we lost to the entire Japanese fleet at Pearl Harbor. 19. What percentage of the 3 million Biden let in is 19? 1/100th of a percent, perhaps? I don't have a calculator in front of me. It's infinitesimal. It's a pimple on the backside of an elephant, relatively speaking, but a very deadly pimple. It's a melanoma. Okay? So understand the problem. You have Republicans. Maria, oh, goodness, I think it's Espinoza in Florida running as a Republican. We need to legalize people who have been here more than 5 years. And she said it on Fox, and they kind of tried to question her. But the biggest question is how do you know how long they've been living here? There is nothing to prevent an alien from coming into the United States 8 months from now and claiming to have been here since the year 2020, because there's no way to refute what they put down. And if you can't show that they're lying, you have to approve the petition. And I'm going to let you in on another little secret. It only takes 15 to 20 minutes to approve an application. It can take days or weeks to deny an application. So if you are flooded with tens of millions of applications, the order of the day will be clear the backlog. The only way to do that is get out your approval stamp. And when you do that, you're going to be giving lawful status to people who will lie about material facts. And Mayorkas has already said that when people get citizenship by lying, they will take absolutely zero action, even though it's a felony, because now that they're Americans, they will have the full and entire protection of the entire government of the United States of America behind them. Unless, of course, you're an American who goes to a school board meeting, or they accuse you of being, you know, God knows what. So illegal aliens who lie, or aliens who lie on applications for citizenship, have nothing to fear. It blows my mind. And his justification was, if people know that we're going to look at their applications and we deport them or we take their citizenship, this may deter people from making applications for citizenship. Well, it should, but it should deter those people who plan to lie. And in fact, recently, Homeland Security deported the father of one of the plotters who wanted to blow up the New York City subway system. They stripped him of his United States citizenship because he lied. And when did they do that? In 2018. What's interesting about 2018 is that Donald Trump had implemented a task force to go after naturalization fraud. Why? Well, when our guys raided the compound, the Bin Laden compound, they found in his library a copy of the 9/11 Commission report, which is interesting. You know, I gave testimony to the commission. They also found an application for U.S. citizenship. If you go into many of the terrorists that have been arrested in the United States, or even around the world, many of them had been told by their handlers to get U.S. citizenship and a U.S. passport before they started to act in concert with the terrorists. Once you get U.S. citizenship, you get a U.S. passport, you can even change your name when you naturalize, and your U.S. passport only reflects your new name. So we have terrorists putting themselves in their own witness protection program, and what they do is they alternate passports. And the way it works is simple. It's like covering your tracks in the desert by dragging the broom behind you to cover the tracks in the sand. What they do, they get a U.S. passport, the name of Joe Smith. They fly to a country, England, Germany, France, doesn't matter. They get there. They put their U.S. passport away. They take out their Pakistani, Ethiopian, Lebanese, whatever passport. And on that passport, they travel to some other country. They go away for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks. They go to a terror training camp. Maybe they carry out an assassination. They blow up a building. They come back through that country in Europe on their original passport, put that away, and then they fly home on their American passport. The inspector at the airport looks at that passport and says, oh, you had 5 weeks in Germany. Hope you had a good time. Because you've covered the fact that after you got to Germany, 5 hours later, you were on an airplane to Turkey or an airplane to Syria. Well, God knows where you went, you see? So you've got the head of Homeland Security saying what? You can lie on your applications for citizenship, which is a felony that carries many years in jail. This is a serious crime. And we will protect you from whom? From ourselves. We will take no action, even though we are duty-bound to act against you. Think about that. So I want to read something, because this is really, really important. This was part of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. By the way, if you go to my article at Front Page Magazine about the TSA, you'll see a bunch of these links there. Please always check out the links in my articles, because I try to give you as much background material as possible. It's really important. Really important. But here's something that you need to understand.
And be sure to share this information, folks. Be part of his bucket brigade, because what you're getting here, this is a master's course on what's really happening in terms of immigration and how it exists, the policies as they exist now. Have been and are becoming more and more an existential threat to our national security. There's no question about that.
Well, I'll tell you what I fear. Iran is preparing nuclear weapons. They've admitted, they claim they have the materials to make a bomb. Okay. We know that Russia is furious over what we're doing. If you don't think they don't have sleeper agents in the United States right now, you're nuts. And there was just an article in the Washington Times about how China has been trying to subvert the federal banking system by putting their people in place here in the United States or coercing people that are working in the Fed. I mean, this is a multi-pronged attack, and I'd love to know why we're doing nothing to stop the flood of drugs that's killing hundreds of thousands, over 100,000 overdoses of fentanyl. But I want you to understand there's more deaths than that. How many crimes are committed by drug addicts who are desperate for the money? And they're not rational at that point because they're desperate and they shoot or stab or do whatever. How many people get behind the wheel higher than a kite and kill or maim? How many gang murders and crimes are committed and those gangs are funded by the drug cartel, the drug trade? You have cartel members here in the United States and they're super violent. I investigated these people. And the drugs don't just come from Latin America. It comes from Asia. We have the Jamaican posses. Earlier, you made the point about the fact they live within the ethnic immigrant communities. They do. And the most likely victims are the members of the community. Now, one of the tactics they do, and China does it all the time, is they will approach somebody in the United States and say, you're going to work for us. And the Chinese government does it to Chinese citizens in America as a routine. And the guy says, I'm not going to work for you. I left China because I hate what you're doing. And they say, really? Is this a photograph of your sister? Is this a photograph of your brother and his child? Is this your mother? You're going to do what we're telling you to do, or we're going to put them in jail. They may disappear. People occasionally get lost in the prison system. Guess what? They now have a cooperator in the United States. And if you don't think the Russian mob does the same thing, or the Jamaican drug posse do the same thing, you're crazy. There was a hit on a woman that lived a couple of miles from me, and the hit was put in place by the Iranians because she has been an outspoken critic of the Iranian regime. They were going to kidnap her, put her on a boat, because I live only a couple of blocks from the water. It was like a scene out of a James Bond movie. They were going to drug her, carry her out of her house, which was like two blocks from the water, and bring her back to Iran and torture her. This was like a year ago. This is happening in America right now. The media is not reporting on it. But if you read through the Justice Department briefings, if you go through the indictments and so forth, you can find it. We have opened the door to a horror show, and the people frequently that suffer the most are the immigrants who come legally. They're vulnerable, and instead of protecting them, they came here fleeing persecution and corruption, and they're finding out that this government is more violent and corrupt than the government they fled. I don't know of any other country that would open the door to heroin and meth and fentanyl the way this government has. And no commercials to warn people and tell people how to use these dangerous illegal drugs safely? Is this government looking out for you or your family or your children and teaching kids in second grade about cross-dressing and homosexuality? You can call it what you want. I call it perversion. I call it child abuse. I don't care what adults do, okay? I'm a New Yorker. I really don't care. I don't care if 48 people wearing dresses want to hang from the rafters and slather themselves with mayonnaise, okay? Knock yourself out as long as everybody in the room is there of their own free will and they're over the age and they're not coerced or whatever. But when we're talking about children, this is so inappropriate and so dangerous. This is the way you destroy a society from within. And in fact, if you go online and look up social reference points, I call them societal reference points, there have been studies done about the way to disrupt a society by removing the reference points. What are the reference points? The idea of man, female. It's like going to a neighborhood and they change the street sign, and you haven't been there in a number of years. Lots of luck trying to find McDonald's. They've turned down buildings. They've changed the street signs. Gee whiz, I thought McDonald's was next to the firehouse, but there's no firehouse here. So how do I find McDonald's? You don't. This is about the destruction of the United States from within by turning everything inside out, upside down. And too many Americans are fools. This is about questioning what you're being told. If it's wrong, it's wrong. I don't want to be in style. I've never wanted to be in style. I've always wanted to do what's right, and it starts with asking the right questions. This is about what I call the art of the question. The people that oppose America and Americans don't want you asking questions. They tell you, follow the science, which leads me to a story, and then I'm going to read this excerpt from the 9/11 Commission staff report. I wrote a piece about the science Nazis and Albert Einstein. Albert Einstein was probably one of the most incredible human beings to ever walk the earth. For a laboratory, he had a brain and a blackboard and chalk. I mean, stop and think about the enormity of that. He figured out gravitational waves. He figured out black holes. He figured out the speed limit for light. He did all of this by developing the concepts of space-time and general relativity. In Germany, in the early 30s, when he lectured at universities, the Nazis hated him. It was their undoing. If he had stayed in Germany, we might not have gotten the bomb, and God knows how the war might have ended. We might not be here now. That's how serious this is. So he was lecturing about his general theories and specific theories of relativity. And the Nazis got two Nobel laureate physicists who were Nazis to confront Einstein and accuse him of practicing Jewish science. And they emotionally whipped the audiences into a feeding frenzy, and he had to flee for his life. Some of his colleagues were beaten. He was convinced that if he didn't leave Germany, they would kill him, and he was a pacifist. That's why he left Germany. So think about that. They had scientists who got the Nobel Prize for Physics attacking his theories on relativity, which have all been proven to be right by modern technology, how many years later, right? So now we're hearing the same crap. We're hearing what? Follow the who science. Science isn't a book. It's a process. It's the process of asking questions and devising experiments to get the answers to the questions. In my journey, I've had the opportunity to meet some truly incredible people. One of the people I met was a nuclear engineer who actually worked with Hyman Rickover on nuclear propulsion. My dad's biggest hero was Hyman Rickover. And what he loved about him was he was brilliant at what he did for the Navy. He said, and the cool thing, although my dad wasn't particularly religious, he very much identified with Judaism. And he said, you know, it was so tough in the military to admit to being Jewish. So, you know, anti-Semitism has gotten better to some extent. We're still not where we should be. We need to stamp out bigotry and hatred wherever we find it. It's ugly, including people that think that white people are the problem. That's a very big form of racism and bigotry. But Rickover never concealed who he was, and he was brilliant. And I was talking to this gentleman who was a nuclear engineer, very accomplished, and we were talking about the space program. And I said, you know, there's one major thing that we got out of the space program. He said, no, there isn't, Mike. And we got into this whole thing. He said, do you know how many things came out of the space program? I said, well, what would you think is the number one? He said, I can't give you a number one. There's just so many. I said, I can give you a number one. He said, there's a number one? What is it? I said, the space program has provided scientists with the next set of questions. It took about 10 seconds, and he started laughing, and he said, my gosh, you're right. He said, that is exactly right, the next set of questions. That's how important questions are. Everything that we do, everything that we endeavor starts with a question. Can we fly? If so, how do we make it happen, right? We always ask the questions, and then we try to find the answers by doing experiments and devising technology. It's at the foundation. So when people tell you, don't question what you're being told. Run for your life because this person is a problem. This is why they had the book burnings in the Nazi regime. Don't question. Don't think independently. Do as you're told or else. Is that not what we're witnessing today? And as an educator, this should be particularly bothersome to you, James.
It does bother me. I look, and you know, this has gone on for a couple of generations now, Mike. Especially in the college and university system, these guys aren't taught how to think; they're taught what to think. And they
I make an analogy you're going to like. We're teaching people. I compare it to Harry Houdini. Harry Houdini, in order to escape the chains, those of you not familiar with, he was an escape artist and a magician. He would swallow the keys to the locks. And he taught himself how to spit up the keys when he needed them. Isn't that kind of the way that kids take tests today?
Well, they teach to the test. Yeah, absolutely.
And they that teach way, you what keys the test to spit up at the right good. Time.
Right.
So
yeah, let me just
go to this because I want you to understand that when you have any politician who talks about comprehensive reform, you need it to be voted out of office. They're dangerous. Because we could be looking at an influx of over 100 million or more from all over the world, folks. Not sustainable. Everyone here, if these are kids, need to go to school immediately. They need food and water. They need transportation and housing. It is not sustainable. Think about the water. Think about electricity. Not sustainable. But on top of that, think of the national security and public safety issue. So this comes from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. Now think of that statement, immigration fraud. And you have Mayorkas saying that when we discover fraud, we will take zero action. This is the Department of Homeland Security? Really? I predicted that if he got the job, that it would become the Department of Homeland Surrender, and tragically, I was right. But it gets worse. The primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. The aliens being let in are filing for asylum, and they don't qualify. Asylum isn't because you live in poverty. Asylum isn't because you live in a crime-ridden country. By that standard, Americans in major cities like Chicago, New York, San Francisco would qualify for asylum. Political asylum means that because of your race, your religion, your ethnicity, your tribal affiliation, your sexual orientation, or your political beliefs, you face persecution or worse in your home country. That's not what we're dealing with. But by flooding millions into the system, you overwhelm the system, so there's no way to screen out the people who commit fraud and may be using that as a way of embedding themselves because they're terrorists. So they mentioned Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program after falsely claiming they picked beans in Florida. Mohammed Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. In other words, folks, he was an illegal alien, right? Mohammed Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for residency under the Agriculture Worker Program, but was rejected. Ayad Mahmoud Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State University in Kansas on a student visa. After he dropped out, he remained in the United States out of status. These guys were illegal aliens. And now we are giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens. We had stopped that because of these two bombers and others. And around the world, the vehicle of choice is not airplanes for terrorists, but motor vehicles, trucks, vans, buses, cars. And we're now giving driver's licenses to people whose identities can't be verified. That's what undocumented really means, you see. So it gets worse. There was another passage, and this is really incredible. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status. That was DACA, folks, temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. Again, that issue of asylum. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Well, right now, with so many people in the country, they will be here for years before anyone even opens up their application to review it. Years. Okay? So think of what they're saying. The act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Now that means years. Okay? Terrorists. This is what they're saying in this report. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Could it be more crystal clear than that? And then it gets worse. There is no good news here. I want all of you to understand what is happening. On April 17, 2018, the House Committee on Counterterrorism and Intelligence conducted a hearing on the state sponsors of terrorism and examination of Iran's global terrorism network. I remind you, Iran is on the precipice of nuclear weapons. Okay? They hate us. When they say death to America, take them at their word. They're not playing. Our people are idiots. They're not playing. So one of the people who testified at the hearing was a gentleman by the name of Dr. Emmanuel Ortolenghi. He is a part of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. Two short paragraphs you need to hear. First paragraph is disturbing. The second paragraph causes me to stay awake most nights. And I kid you not, I'm not resorting to hyperbole. This stuff keeps me awake. I lived through 9/11 here in New York City. In recent years, Hezbollah's Latin American networks, I'm just going to interrupt myself one point here. We think Hezbollah, we think Middle East. Well, guess what, folks? They have a huge presence, tens of thousands of operatives throughout Latin America on our southern border that Biden won't secure. And again, we have 50 border states. We have the Canadian border. We have coastline with boats that easily could come in, not at ports of entry, but anywhere along the coastline. We've seen this many times. The Coast Guard has limited resources. And once they're here, the real key to all of this is interior enforcement. And Biden and Mayorkas have shut down interior enforcement. They actually told employers, you can hire illegal aliens, as many as you want. Have at it. We're not going to check. We don't care. You can hire them. Just don't mistreat them. But we're going to do nothing about it. And recently, by the way, a subcontractor, for I believe it was Hyundai, was found to be employing 12-year-old children in a metal stamping factory. Think of how dangerous a metal stamping factory is. I don't know what work these kids did, but since when do we have 12-year-olds working in a factory in America? This is what happens when you have an administration say, hire illegal aliens, it's fine with us, just treat them nicely. So this means Americans lose their jobs, they lose their ability to support themselves, they become homeless, their families break up, and then people under the stress, and I don't know why they do this, I don't get it, but they get involved with drugs or booze. They very often destroy their own families, destroy the future of their children. We are rotting ourselves out from the inside, okay? So understand that. So now let me just read this quote to you. In recent years, Hezbollah's Latin American networks have also increasingly cooperated with violent drug cartels and criminal syndicates, often with the assistance of local corrupt political elites. You have to wonder how many of those corrupt political elites are here in the United States, but that's for another day. Cooperation includes laundering of drug money, arranging multi-ton shipments of cocaine to the United States and Europe, and directly distributing and selling illicit substances to distant markets. Proceeds from these activities finance Hezbollah's arms procurement. If you're opposed to guns, Iran's buying them with the drug money here in the United States. Proceeds from these activities finance Hezbollah's arms procurement, its terror activities overseas, its hold on Lebanon's political system, and its efforts both in Lebanon and overseas to keep Shia's communities loyal to its cause and complicit in its endeavors. And now we come to the stunner. This toxic crime-terror nexus is fueling both the rising threat of global jihadism and collapse of law and order across Latin America that is helping to drive drugs and people northward into the United States. Think of the caravans, folks. It is sustaining Hezbollah's growing financial needs. It is helping Iran and Hezbollah consolidate a local constituency in multiple countries across Latin America. It is thus facilitating their efforts to build safe havens for terrorists and a continent-wide terror infrastructure that they could use to strike U.S. targets. What more do you need to hear? What more do our politicians need to know before they wake up and say, wait a minute, we're going to get attacked? And I remember after 9/11, when I did all those hearings, and I turned on the TV, and you couldn't turn on a TV channel without watching some yo-yo politician pounding the podium and demanding to know why no one connected the dots. Well, if God forbid there's another terror attack, and let's say, you know, the towers almost came down in 93, the estimate was a couple hundred thousand would have died. What happens if that happens today? We have 200, 300, 400, 500,000 dead bodies. Are they going to be able to say we didn't know, the dots weren't connected? I just spent the evening with you and with my good friend James connecting the dots. I do it in my articles. I've done it in my congressional testimony. I did it when I provided testimony to the 9/11 Commission. Every single dot has now been connected carefully and completely. And what are we doing? This administration is acting in direct opposition to the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, acting in direct opposition to what the laws require, not because the laws are racist or bigot or support white supremacists. The laws are designed to keep terrorists and criminals out of the United States who would kill us. Very simple. Nothing that this administration is doing acts to save or protect America or Americans. We have laid out the welcome mat, turning the American flag into a welcome mat for people who want our country destroyed. I want someone to explain to me the rational thought process behind this, unless this administration is out to become the last administration of the United States. That's my fear. What do you think of that, James?
Okay. That brings me to a very important question. I've been monkeying with this for a while, and I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to put you right behind the eight ball because we got about 5 minutes, okay? Because you're not going to be able to answer this in 5 minutes, but I'm going to go ahead and shoot it out anyway. All right. Huh. It's January 8th, 2024. President of the United States, Michael Cutler, has just taken his hand off the Bible, embraced his wife and son, celebrating the country has gone insane. He's gone back to the Oval Office. Two things, because we don't have that chance. What would be the first two official acts of the Cutler administration?
Okay, first thing, ramp up interior enforcement, create an interior enforcement task force using law enforcement from every federal agency imaginable. The way I was part of the drug task force, we need to go after interior enforcement. And here's the reason why. Anybody determined to enter the United States will get in. It's not a question of if, it's a matter of when. You know, when I met with a bunch of members of Congress in a private closed-door meeting, they were much more effective than hearings because it was freewheeling and there was no five-minute clock in front of you. I asked them, how many times does an aspiring illegal alien have to run the border before they succeed? And I think it was Lamar Smith, who was the chairman of the subcommittee at the time, said to me, you mean there's a number? I said, no, it's a formula. It's one more than the number of times they get stopped. So if you're determined to get in, you're getting in. If we then identify them, make it impossible for them to get jobs, if we go after the fraud and start prosecuting people who engage in marriage fraud, and I'm talking about the Americans now, the ability to do this will dry up. I was part of a fraud task force. We were getting hundreds of applications every month from people that were involved in marriages that were bogus. As soon as we started to deport the aliens and broke up the marriages, within a matter of a year, the applications dropped to a trickle because suddenly everyone said, they're going to come for me, they're going to deport me. But it's all about interior enforcement. We've never had interior enforcement because ICE agents won't only go after the illegal aliens, they would go after crooked employers and crooked attorneys. I helped to prosecute and arrest crooked attorneys, some of my best days on the job, okay? So interior enforcement is the key. The other thing I would do is make a standard announcement. We're going to have the Mike Cutler amnesty. You have 90 days to get out of Dodge. If you're here illegally, leave. If we find you after 90 days, we will take you into custody. You will never be able to get lawful status in the United States. If you want to start the process, go to your home country, file an application, but don't let us catch you here. Give them 90 days, 60 days, whatever it is. That's the Mike Cutler version. If you're a person who got involved in a marriage fraud, we're not going to prosecute you as long as you come forward. But you have 30 days to come forward. If we do the investigation and find that you've engaged in a marriage fraud, we will prosecute you. You're looking at 5 years in jail. For those of you who might aspire to be a nurse or a doctor or a lawyer, can't do it once you have a felony conviction. Think carefully. If you made a mistake, here's your chance to come forward and clear the record. What do you think of that?
You heard it here, folks. Michael Cutler throwing his hat into the ring for the 20. No, I scooped you. I got that's correct. No, man, I think it's fantastic. And to be honest with you, Michael, knowing you the way I do and knowing your perspectives and the hours we've spent over the last few years talking with each other, your answers don't disappoint me, and I knew that you would have something. I knew that you would, and no, it was.
Well, I've given much thought to this, and I've been telling this to members of Congress. By the way, I call that process Operation Truth or Consequences. What do you think of that?
Absolutely. We live, and I've said this a lot of times. You know, I say this frequently. We live in interesting times, and we have a couple minutes left.
As Americans, and we need to focus on what makes us similar, not different, folks. We're not different. James' background is very different from mine, but he's like my brother from another mother, and I feel that way about so many of our fellow Americans from all over the country.
Absolutely.
We have so much more
Absolutely.
In common, and this nonsense of identity politics is toxic, and it's anti-American, and it must stop, and the faster it stops, the better. And we need to take this wonderful summer opportunity to have peaceful, calm discussions with our neighbors that always end with a question, not with a statement, because questions will pop up at the craziest times. That's the way we get people to think.
Friday night, 7 o'clock. You still doing a Michael Cutler hour?
You betcha.
It's 7,
Michael,
right?
And it's michaelcutler.net and frontpagemagazine.com. Thank you for having me, James.
Michael, you have a home here. I've said that more than once, and I know that you know it's true. Thank you. You're always generous with your time, and it is a master's course on what's happening out there in the world from the Michael Cutler perspective. Thank you once again, and I know we'll be talking here soon.
Absolutely. Be safe. Be well. Stay cool.
Oh, you know it, man, every day. Oh, great. That's What a terrific guy. And I'm not kidding. When we, without a certain level of the profanity, and we go into a lot of different things, the conversations we have on the air are very similar to what we have on the phone. That's all the time we've got, folks. God bless you. God bless America. We'll be back taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. All right, we're out of there. Thanks, guys.